The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2013 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2013. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the internet. To find out more about ACCS, or to order additional conference talks, visit our website at accsedu.org. Look for the Conferences tab. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
We do homeschool conferences and homeschool curriculum and training for parents and for teachers outside the classroom on what you can do to reinforce whatever curricula you choose to bring into your home. Right now we're in a day and age where video and computers are wonderful tools to bring teachers and curricula into our homes. But once again, we don't want to leave the child to learn strictly from a DVD or an online teacher. We as parents want to partner with that to equip and train the child and to just follow up with them and make sure they're getting the most out of that opportunity. So we're going to actually look at all three stages of learning, the grammar, the logic, and the rhetoric, and a few tips to get you started with each one. And my goal is at the time to have some time for questions that you or some ideas. I always welcome more ideas from those of you out there who have done this before. So grammar stage, they are not beyond you yet. If you have little ones who are starting their grammar, many schools start in third grade is a common place, fourth grade, some even younger. Well, this is a great place because they can't go too fast. And so they are definitely at your speed, and you should take advantage of that. Many ambitious parents consider even taking an introduction class themselves. I've talked to parents who went to a university and audited a class. Some will order the book early, which I always recommend. Get the book before the first week of school. Go through it yourself. Begin to get an idea and understanding of how the book is laid out and some of the basic concepts taught. I, at my school, have a Latin for Parents course that I have often brought, and I've done it two consecutive Saturdays. Where I introduce parents to the concept of Latin, because it is just so very different from English, as it is an inflected language. And I'll introduce parents to the concept of Latin vocabulary, declension, conjugation, how to help them study for these things. What does it mean to parse a verb, to parse a noun? What does that mean when you translate it? And this can be done in two Saturdays. That actually developed into a Latin for Teachers course, and I began doing teacher trainings and parent trainings. And that is actually now available on DVD through Classical Academic Press. So if that's something that you would like to look into, that tool is available. If you're a teacher here, I would encourage you to look into a Latin for Parents course at your school. Again, all you necessarily need to do is vocabulary, conjugation, declension, just some of those cultural differences that says Latin is not like English. Here is the structure for Latin, and here's what is important to memorize or to know when you're learning your Latin vocabulary, your Latin tools. And again, the grammar school is a great place to start because as parents, we can become equipped to then just grow gradually, step by step with them. If advanced preparation is not possible, and let's face it, we always say, well, we'll get to that when summer comes. And then summer comes, and it really doesn't seem any easier than the school year. The busy life takes advantage of us. So sometimes with all the best intentions, we don't get to do any pre-preparatory work. I always encourage parents to bring home the textbook. Now, of course, there's a classic case of the child that says, well, I didn't have any homework today. So you as the parent need to take initiative that says your Latin book comes home every day. And then I would encourage you to read along that lesson with them. Or maybe after they've gone to bed, peek at it yourself. Again, in the grammar school, they're going fairly slow. So it's a good way for you to stay abreast of, okay, we're talking about nouns this week. Great, nouns. That's what we're looking at, person, place, thing, idea. Same thing in Latin as in English. And let's look at these Latin nouns and what they look like and memorize them. Or for verbs. Oh, we're talking about a new tense. I need to know this Bobis Bit chart. That's what she's working on this week. So just stay with them. If you can't stay a couple of steps ahead, at least stay with them so that you know what is they're responsible for memorizing, for learning that week. Ask them those questions. I have found that the car ride is one of the most valuable opportunities. They're strapped in and the doors are locked and they can't go anywhere. So that's a great opportunity to say, so Michael. What? I hear we're doing the future tense in Latin this week. What is that chant again? And have them recite that to you. Oh, bo bis bit. Or perhaps the vocabulary. I've even had children, and I'll talk about flashcards in just a minute, but have them do their flashcards and quiz one another in the car ride on the way home. For us, it's a 20-minute car ride. Okay, well, as parents, what happens in 20 minutes if they don't have anything to do? They're driving you crazy in the car, you know, with the picking and the touching and the space issues. So give them something productive to do. Pull out their Latin vocabulary, pull out their spelling words, pull out something and have them use that time to quiz one another to study. So that brings me to some homemade tools and resources. So let's see. The first thing I'll do is flashcards. Yes. So flashcards at our school. There are many curricula out there that actually offer online flashcards that you can just print out that will come up digitally. And those are wonderful tools. I still like the old school way of making your flashcards yourself. And the reason is, goes back to my high school Latin teacher who embedded in me, the more senses you use to learn something, the better you retain it. So if they have to write those words out, it's better than just having to glance at them. And a lot of time, glancing is what you're getting. So I actually even use a color-coded system with mine. I haven't brought the whole system, but white typically is for verbs. And I'm going to have Michael pass these around in just a minute so you can look at them if you'd like. On the back, I've put all four principal parts and the English meaning for each principal part. So amo, I love, amare, to love, amavi, I loved, amatum, loved. We do this as young as third grade. Now, I don't expect them to understand the perfect tense and the supine in third grade, but they know I love, to love, I loved, loved. Most of them with Shirley Grammar are going to learn the basic principal parts of verbs. And you will see with the second flashcard of a verb, ago, agere, agi, octum, those last two principal parts change on you dramatically. It's better for them to memorize these as a set while young than have to go back and add principal parts when they get older, because agi does not look much like agere, and there's some that are even stranger than that. So once again, I like to do that. Different curricula will have you write out all the English meanings. Some of them won't. I have found that being able to go ahead and write out the I loved, loved is very helpful, because when we learn the supine, I say, guys, let's do amo together. And by this time, they're in seventh grade, but they have it ingrained up here. Amo, amare, amavi, amatum, I loved, to love, I loved. And they all chime in, loved. It's you already know it. It's done. So that actually saves a lot of time and effort later. So those are verbs. Michael, you want to start passing this around? Thank you. For nouns, we have pink for feminine and blue for masculine, and I often use yellow for neuter, and I often use green for adjectives. And you'll see here I have the first word on the front, and on the back I have the genitive singular and the gender. Puella, puellae, F for feminine girl, puer, pueri, M for masculine, boy. And then I have the same thing, I have two third declension words here. It's so critical that they memorize that genitive singular, because while boy and girl seem simple enough to figure out your gender, nox means night, it's actually feminine. Mensa is table, it's feminine. Corpus, your body, is neuter. They really need to learn that genitive singular so they know what declension it is. They really need to learn that gender so that they know what gender it is and which rules it's going to follow. It becomes extremely important. And so if your book does not include that, I would strongly advise you to do that. It will save pain and suffering and wailing and gnashing of teeth later. So here are two more that are third declension that are the same type of thing. You want to go ahead and pass this out. Now, memory studies show that when you take time to work on memorizing something, after about a minute, maybe two, your brain starts to go into passive mode, and you're not actively memorizing anymore. So to sit down for even 5 minutes straight to memorize vocabulary, I wouldn't go more than 5 minutes. You often aren't really productive after that. So as I've said, oftentimes in the car, riding to and from school is a great time to study their vocabulary cards. I would keep them in a Ziploc bag in the glove compartment. Hey, guess what I have here for our car ride activity? Another great time actually is watching TV in the evening. If there's a family show you like to watch, the kids do not need to see the advertisements for Tide and the new Ford F-150. This doesn't apply to them. But those commercials come in 2 to 3 minute intervals. So that's a great time to say, okay, hey, get out your Latin vocabulary cards. Let's go through them for 2 to 3 minutes. And then the show comes back on, put them down. Commercial comes back on, hey, pick them up again. And let's click through those. So that's another idea. Or any other time where you want to kind of do an on-off, come back and forth to them type thing. Okay, another homemade resource I wanted to share with you are the declension conjugation worksheets. Yes. If you look at the handout I gave you, on the back side of the handout, you see a the second page of the handout, you'll see a conjugation declension worksheet. It looks something like this. And for those of you who don't have a handout, I'm going to pull one up on the screen. Here we go. The first one you see up here is the declension worksheet. And this is something I use for nouns. You'll notice the directions ask you first to identify the stem of the noun up here, which is going to that genitive singular, that second part. So if you're looking at the card, it's pueli or pueri or noctis. Then to identify the stem of the noun, they chop off the genitive singular ending. So you end up with puel, puer, noct. And then to add the correct endings for the blank declension. So if I'm teaching first declension, I would put a 1 in there. If we're doing second declension, I'd put a 2 or so forth and so on. And then they would go through and write down their stems in these different rectangular spaces. And then we would go back and practice adding their endings together. A lot of times I would use a transparency, if you're doing this at home as a parent, work through the first box together. You can see on this sheet that there are 3 separate boxes. Then the next 2, I'd ask them to do it on their own and then come back and check, or open the book and check, did we get it right? And then the third one, again, have them do it on their own, come back and check it and do it right. One of the things that they really enjoy doing, and I will illustrate this with the conjugation worksheet in just a moment, is to write the stem in pencil. And then let them pull out a colored pencil, their favorite color, except that yellow really does not work well. But pull out their favorite color, and they get to write the endings in that color. And there's something about the magic of getting to use a colored pencil, whether in class or at home, that is so much fun. But it's also a great learning device. It's a great visual cue, because what do they have to think about if they're separating out the colors? What's the stem? What's the ending? They're having to think through that an additional step simply by putting down a pencil and picking up a colored one. And so it's a simple little thing. It doesn't seem that significant. They really enjoy it. In fact, they ask, can we use our colored pencils? But it really is a wonderful learning tool to do that with. I'm going to now pass around the conjugation worksheet. The conjugation worksheet is the same thing, but for verbs. So you can see here at the top, I'm asking them to identify the stem of the verb, then to conjugate the verb by adding the correct ending for the blank tense. You can insert that there. And then translate the box marked with an asterisk. So you can see here I've got a blank again for the stem. The first verb I used was the classic amo, amare, wrote amare in there. How do you find your stem? You chop off the RE. And then you'll notice that in a regular black pen, and of course I always have them work in pencil, but pens is what I had available to me. I have them write in the person, first, second, third. I have them write the stem, ama, all the way through. And then I went back in purple, and in purple I added the bo, bis, bit, bimus, bitis, blunt. And then there is a space, notice letter C, the instruction says, translate the box marked with an asterisk. So then they have to take this box right here, knowing that it's first person, because there would be a 1 there. It's singular. First person, singular is I. It's future tense, because I've put in my purple bobus bit, so it means I will love. And this takes it a step further, because it takes it beyond memorization to also translating, reading, understanding, meaning, which I find to be very, very helpful. You know, it's one thing to regurgitate some sort of a chant. It's another thing to really understand what it means. What do I mean when I say amabo? What am I trying to communicate? What do I mean when I want to say a novice? What am I trying to communicate? And so I have found that with this simple tool, it really increased my students' understanding of the whole concept of person, tense, and number. But this, guys, is super easy. And this works not just in third grade. It works all the way up through advanced subjunctive constructions. It's just a very simple tool, but it's one that really transformed our classroom and our student learning. I had a number of parents come up and say, my daughter's finally making the connections now because we went through this process of taking the two, pulling them apart, putting them together, and then what does it mean when I put them together this way? So it's a wonderful, easy tool to make. Again, I'm happy to email this to you. You can easily put this. This was a Microsoft Word document, and I am not super computer savvy, so it's pretty easy to put together. But if you email me, I'm more than happy to just go ahead and email you the worksheet or simply photocopy the one you've got. Songs, chants, CDs. The grammar school, we always hear about how the grammar school kids love to sing. And I think songs and chanting are very, very important. I've noticed a new link on the ACCS website for Latin chants. Those are very, very helpful. Our school has created a CD of songs and chants that we have put together for the grammar school kids. Again, if you email me, I'd be more than happy to put you in contact with our secretary. You could order one of those. And those are very, very helpful. We can learn things so well by putting them to song, to rhyme, and to reason. And in the grammar school, they do love that singing. And in fact, even putting it into the car while we're driving to and from school is a very helpful time to review those chants, even the ones they haven't learned yet. In fact, at our school, we have something called a memory period every morning where we gather for assembly. And each day is a different day. One day is math, one day is grammar, and one day is Latin. And the whole school from kindergarten, well, the whole grammar school from kindergarten up through fifth, sixth grade, will review these Latin chants together and sing them together. Well, the kindergarten students don't know Latin yet. But by the time they get to third grade, when I want to teach the irregular verb esse, all I have to say is, guys, it's the football chant. Oh! Sum es est, sumus est sunt, touchdown, touchdown, block that punt. It works. And they already know their essay chant. They've memorized it. So I am a huge advocate for songs and chants in the grammar school. And that's something that as parents, you can do very easily. Just practice it in the car, sing it at home. All right, getting the most out of your textbook. Whatever textbook you're using, get to know it. Most of the kids don't explore past the page that they're on. But when they bring home that textbook the first day, or you get it in the mail for the first time, sit down together. I do little textbook tours my first day of class. I'll even play games where I do searches and seeks, you know, little treasure hunts with the workbook, saying, can you find, or what is the quote from Cicero on page 100? And they'd have to go to page 100 and find it and write it down. And I do some fun things like that, but I also intentionally have them going back to the dictionary and the reference charts and any appendices or indexes that are provided. Get to know your textbook. Know what's provided. Most textbooks will have an entire reference section in the back. And what I often do is take those little post-it tab notes, and I will tab those the hot pink flag for my students so that they're not flipping looking for it, but whenever they're doing an assignment, they have a very quick, here's my pink tab back, I go to the reference section. Here's my green tab back, I go to the dictionary section. And they can find that quickly and easily. So help them know what resources are available to them. It's amazing to me how a student will go through the whole year. Oh, there's a dictionary in the back. Yeah, there is. So help them explore that. For some of you, you're using your textbook as a consumable. Fantastic. If you can use it as a consumable, I always encourage you to do that. Use highlighters to do note-taking. Baby steps of note-taking. Mortimer Adler's How to Read a Book, he always encourages people to just mark their book up. Well, I'm going to start that in third grade. Now, you have to be very careful. Let them know this does not apply to every book that they own. We don't want to ruin your home library. But each of my students has a highlighter. And as we read through the grammar lesson, there might be something that is particularly important, perhaps a definition. For example, an adjective is a little word that says which one, what kind, or how many. Right? And I'll say, do you think that's important? And of course, they pick up pretty quickly that that's a yes answer. And so they say, oh, yes, that's very important. And so they all get out their highlighters and they highlight that line. feel I've done multiple things here. One, I've really placed emphasis on this definition. So in their mind, because I've spoken it, I've acted this out, I've made it a big deal, they realize this is important. Second, by not only hearing it and reading it, but then by go back and highlighting it, or using multiple senses to focus in on that definition. And third, I'm already training them in how to take notes. What are good note-taking skills? Find those important definitions. Some textbooks, the Latin for Children series does this, will go back and they will have a grammar worksheet where they ask them to define things, or they'll ask them certain questions from that grammar lesson. I'm very intentional in making sure those are the things we've highlighted and those are the things we've talked about, so that they understand how to get back and see those. So even if your teacher isn't doing that in school, or if you're a homeschool parent doing this, use your highlighter. If you can make this a consumable, use your highlighter. If you can't make it a consumable, I would encourage them to have perhaps a little spiral where they have to write out a certain definition, some of those basic essentials, because again, that's just using another sense, putting extra emphasis on it to learn something. Okay, let me talk about a few online resources for you. This day and age of technology is absolutely wonderful. It provides us with so many different resources and ways to practice our Latin. And throughout this talk, I'm going to, please be patient with me as I jump on the internet, because I would like to show some to you. Ooh. I don't know what I did. Sorry about that. This first website... registration booth. Thank you. Okay, we're going to imagine together. My apologies, was actually working right before we started. I tested it. There's a website called Headventureland. For those of you who have the handout, you will see the web address right there. It's very easy to find. It's just head, like your head, ventureland.com. I'll show it to you again. So it's spelled just like you see it, headventureland1word.com, and it is a gaming website put together by Classical Academic Press. They're a creator of a K-12 Latin program, but honestly, it doesn't matter what program you're using. This is a free online resource. You can come here and use it regardless. One of their games that they have is called Flash Dash. It's a fun vocabulary game. If you're using their Primer series, you can type in the book you're using, A, B, or C, the chapter you're in, and it will basically pull up a little multiple choice vocabulary quiz complete with music and sounds and all those bells and whistles. They also have some wonderful e-readers. What I find excites children more than anything is the ability to read Latin. They've been memorizing. They want to know what they can do with it. Well, obviously, in third and fourth grade, there's not a whole lot of reading that they can do, but these e-readers are wonderful ways to give them little samplings, little tastes of that, and their video stories. They also have some little movies where they'll be talking about a puella who is walking in the forest. So they interchange Latin words in amongst English words. And that's a really nice way for them to see the Latin word in context. In fact, there's something about a missing princess right now, and I constantly have people coming up to me at the booth saying, when is the missing princess story going to be concluded? Our children are waiting on the finale for that. It worked before I started.
Sorry.
Okay. We'll skip the grammar one, and we'll go on ahead and talk to, we'll go on to the logic stage, because I can come back to that website in just a moment. Okay, so logic stage. Are they too old for songs and games? Really? They're not. Middle school kids in this logic stage are transitioning from bring grammar school kids into rhetoric school kids, and it's a long transition period. And some days they really want to be very big and mature, and other days they want to just be little kids again. And they're not sure which way they're going to be, what day, and neither are you. So it makes it a really fun, exciting guessing game. What I have found is that The songs and chants still apply to them, but you have to use them carefully because they don't want to feel babied. So instead of getting them to stand up and dance around and do movements with them, a lot of times we'll just sit in our desk and I'll say, are we good? Thank you so much. And we'll say, y'all aren't falling asleep, were you? And we'll say, do you remember that football chant? Okay, well, let's just say it where we are. Or do you remember the Jingle Bells version of Hic Illae? Let's go through that together. And we'll just sit where we are and do it. And they still enjoy it. It's still helpful. I have sophomores and juniors taking advanced placement, collegiate level Latin, and they'll still break out into a case cadence every now and then because they're trying to reach back and remember which form that was. And those things help. So even though they might not profess a great love for it like they once did, they're still valuable tools. What I have found to be even more valuable, however, is food and competition. I found that I can get most, a middle school student, and a high school student for that matter, do most anything by food and competition. So in my class, instead of beginning the day with a drill or a chant, I might do one quick one, but a lot of times I'll say, pull out a blank sheet of notebook paper, and I want you to decline the noun puella. Or maybe something more complicated, I want you to decline the neuter noun corpus. Or I want you to conjugate this verb in the present, active, subjunctive. And I'll say, go. And then the first person to have completed it correctly wins a Hershey's Kiss or a piece of candy, food, competition. And that works really well. At home, you can do something similar. You can start timing them. I have children that respond very well to competition. Some of them don't as much, and that's quite all right. I would still have them do that anyway. Let's say, let's just see how quickly you can knock this chart out. And again, that's just helping reinforce their memorization. Or you can open up the book yourself and say, okay, I'm looking at this present subjunctive chart thing, and it looks like it uses amo. What do you think that chart is? And have them say it to you. Because once again, that's helping them practice their charts and their conjugating and their declining, which is so critical to being able to read. So that's another way that you can help them practice that. All right, relevance. The other big thing I find with middle school students. Is relevance. They want to know, why do I need to do this? In grammar school, it was fun. It was kind of the cool big thing to do. In logic school, we're still learning Latin. And why is it important to me? Why are we learning this anyway? How is it going to benefit me? How is it relevant to me? Those are questions that come up in one way, shape, or form. And I have found that the most beneficial things that I will do in class some days are doing warm-ups that talk about state mottos or anatomy. And I'm connecting their Latin terms to something else that they're going to use. One of the things, my favorites, are the state mottos. There are 25 states in our nation that have Latin mottos, and they have wonderful seals and coat of arms that harken back to symbolism from ancient Greece and Rome. And those are fabulous ways to show them how the ancient world has had an impact on their modern lives. In fact, I've woven this into the Latin Alive curriculum. You can see them there. You can also go online and Google Latin state mottos, and it's not hard to find. You can bring those up. Anatomy is another wonderful thing. You can put, especially once they get to third declension, you can just, I will walk in the room and I'll put the word patella on the whiteboard. And they know that when they come in, they have to sit down and look up the word patella. So you could do this at home, too. Patella, what is that? And they'll look it up and they'll find small dish. I say, okay, what part of your body, bone-wise, think about your skeletal system, what part looks like a small dish? Anybody know what the patella is? Kneecap. And it does, it looks like a small dish. There are other words like femur, which actually means thigh in Latin. In fact, you'll see the word femur a lot when you start to read war stories because people get injured in the femur quite a bit. Or the humerus, which we call the humerus. That's what your funny, why it's your funny bone, because it's humerus. So it's a really bad Latin pun. It's use your upper arm. So they begin to see, oh, my Latin's helping me. And sure enough, when my students got to ninth grade and took anatomy, many of them said, wow, the Latin really saved me because of all the memorization we had to do on bones and muscles. So those are just two little tips on how you can make Latin relevant for them. And then they really kind of re-buy into the idea that, oh, okay, this is a cool class. This does have relevance for me. This is, and it's just a good motivator. Okay, resources for advanced grammar. Let's talk about the question-answer flow. This is on your handout. It's on the opposite side of the sheet with the links that I gave you. Those of you who are familiar with Shirley Grammer remember her question-answer flow. This is not nearly as elaborate as the one from that book, but this is where I essentially had the idea. The difference between logic and grammar school is often a much greater concentration on reading. They've learned the grammar of the language, and now they're learning how to apply it to reading. Now, I will pause just a minute to say, I hope that they're reading on every level, because reading is what inspires them to study, and even a simple subject-verb sentence is reading and excites them. But with logic, we start to get bigger, we start to get longer, we start to get more involved. And so this is something you as a parent can do when they're sitting down doing their Latin homework, even if you don't know all the answers. If they start to get that brain freeze or feel overwhelmed, all you have to do is kind of go back to this. We always start by looking for the verb. Well, what is the main verb in that sentence? Typically, they're going to have an OST, must, tis, and ending. Not always, but most of the time. Let's start with there. Okay, now what kind of verb is it? Action verb or a linking verb? What is the ending? Let's underline that. Okay, parse that ending. This goes back to that conjugation worksheet that we just did. What is its person, tense, and number? What kind of a subject does it need, a singular subject or a plural subject? Once you have that answer, okay, now let's go look for our subject. I need something nominative, because that's the case of the subject noun. I need something that's singular or plural, because my verb is singular or what have you. And so you can see how this question-answer flow will walk you through looking at a sentence. And for logic school level, this is going to apply to most sentences. They will get beyond this eventually, but even my advanced students, we get to one of those infamous Ciceronian sentences that runs on for 3 pages, and we first stop and say a prayer and thank the Lord for editors who provide punctuation marks, because that is so very nice. But we again go back to this question-answer flow. Okay, guys, stop panicking. Where is the verb? Now, what is the subject? Now, what is the object? Now, do we see any prepositional phrases? Do we have any modifiers that we've not taken account for? Okay, and then you can get into relative subordinate clauses and all that. But you can walk through the basic bones of, let's go back and think through. If this sentence is too big for us to just read right away, that's fine. Let's go back to our tools, and this question-answer flow is a fabulous one to do that with. Again, if you don't have a copy of the handout or you want this electronically, please email me. I'm more than happy to send that to you. If you have it, make as many copies of it as you want. Okay. Okay, graphic grammar cards. Michael, would you hand me, bring me those? And bring me the ones from Classical Conversations, too. These are some wonderful resources I found from some publishers. Classical Conversations, I got a little bit distracted with our grammar school. This is probably more appropriate to the grammar school, but works in early logic as well. You can see as you fold it out, it's a really nice form that has your endings with it. I'll pass this around. And on the back side, they have a place that's blank that you can write in. And I found this to be a wonderful tool, a wonderful resource. It's really sturdy, almost indestructible, and a great tool for you to keep at home for them when they come home with their homework. The second one that I want to show you is the Graphic Latin Grammar from Bolchesi Carducci, a wonderful publisher. Michael, would you please pass this one around? This one from Classical Conversations, who, by the way, also has a booth here, so if this is something you like, you can get it today. Bolchesi Carducci is going to go for advanced Latin grammar. So the Classical Conversations one is fine for your basic noun declensions and your indicative verb tenses. When you start getting to passive and to the subjunctive mood, it's going to go beyond what that provides. So I recommend that mostly for grammar school and in early mid logic. These graphic grammar cards are fabulous. I actually get one for each one of my advanced Latin students starting in about 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade. And we already have one started. I'll have Michael, when I give this to you, start it in the back. It's multiple pages, but you can see that they go through every noun declension, every verb conjugation, active, passive, subjunctive, active, passive, irregular verbs. And one of the things I love is that the stem is in black, the endings are in red. So it's very, because it's small print, because they're trying to compact a lot into a small space, but because of that color difference, it's really easy to see What is the stem? What is the ending? It also has the numbers on here, prepositions. These are just fantastic. For my students, this is a staple. Would you agree with that, Michael? Okay. Michael just took an advanced Latin class this last year. He was just reading Latin literature, so there was no grammar book anymore, but they all had one of these. And it was so great when he said, okay, I know that ending. I know I've seen that ending. But the mind blank comes. This is a fantastic thing to have. Okay, we're going to try online resources once again. So let's see if this works. Okay, wonderful. Okay, so this is the Head Venture Land slide I was talking to you about. And here's the flash dash right here. And the flash dash is going to work for vocabulary. It's a great vocabulary practice. I'm going to go ahead and skip over that for now. But again, it's like online flashcard game. Down here is a game called Know Your Stuff. And it is a little kind of throwback to the old trivia quiz show games. This was actually created by two of my advanced level students. They had completed all the way through AP Latin, earned fives on the AP exam. And so for the next year, I had them create a Know Your Stuff game. It's meant to go along with the Latin Alive Book 1, but really it's good for any curriculum you want to use. But it's going to ask questions about grammar. It's also going to ask questions about history and culture and myth. It's something that they can play individually, or they can invite a friend over, and they can play as a team. And that's a really fun website, great for review, especially if you like to do the multiple choice reading comprehension type questions for NLE and things like that. Great, great website. The next one that I want to spend a little bit more time on is this one by Susan Schelmerdine. She wrote a book called Introduction to Latin. It's really a first-year college book, but it has, like WeLock, it has all of the grammar that you need for Latin. And for those of you who like to have your own parent resource, I have many parents ask, well, is there a college-level book I could buy as an additional resource to back up my children's studies? And Susan Schelmerdine's Introduction to Latin is the one I always recommend, even over WeLock. I think her instructional language is much easier to understand, and her flow of the lessons is just as wonderfully laid out, I think, as WeLock, perhaps even better. And one of the things I love is this student page, where it has a lot of exercises. So I'm going to go to one and show you how it works. You don't have the Susan Schelmerdine chapter necessarily, but you don't have to have the book to complete the exercises. So I'm going to go over to chapter 4, and I'm going to go to the principal part chart. So here what I have is, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 verbs, and those how they have blanks where the principal part should be. Okay, so I type it in. I'm going to check it. Well, I got a 7, partially because I didn't complete it. But notice it tells you some of your answers are incorrect. Incorrect answers have been left in place for you to change. Your score is a 7%. Okay, clearly I have a lot more studying to do. But then they can go back. They can fill in the blanks. They could look up the word. The beauty of this is, mom and dad, you don't have to know the answer because there's a self-check. So what you want to do is just supervise, making sure they're actually doing what you asked them to do. But you have this website here. Here's a nice conjugation, another one, where you just type in the answers, hit the self-check button, and it tells you whether you got them right or wrong. There are some other exercises on here that are vocabulary crossword puzzles. There are some on here that are even translation, where they give you a sentence and you have to type in the translation. It'll either say, yes, you're correct, or no, you're not, go back and try again. So that's a wonderful online tool for especially that logic to advanced level to review their grammar. Okay, National Latin Exam I wanted to look at briefly just because I end up with so many questions about this. As I said, one of the carrots for these older kids is definitely competition. And with most curricula that you're using, you can start the National Latin Exam in your middle school years, no problem. So here at this website, which is nle.org, you can see that if you go over here to the far left, what each exam covers. You're looking not only at the level of Latin, how much grammar they've had, but you're also going to end up getting information on history and culture items that are covered. The nice thing is that now they tell you what types of culture they're covering. Is it weddings? Is it funerals? Is it army? They tell you what period of history they're covering. If it's mythology, they tell you, well, we're looking at the labors of Hercules, or we're looking at the gods and goddesses, or we're looking at the Metamorphoses. So they will tell you what is being quizzed on that upcoming exam. The other thing you can find on this website is actually old exams. You can download a PDF file for 2012 that has every exam on it plus an answer key. And the exams are all 40 questions, multiple choice. This is something that I do in class just for fun. And I'll pass it out, and I'll say, let's just see how well we do. No, it's not a grade. Just let's just see how well we do. And the class will do them. And then when they're all done, I'll read out the answers, or I'll call them out. Okay, who got number one? What do you think, what is the subject in the sentence, femina est pulchra? And somebody will raise their hand and say, oh, it's A, femina. I'll say, oh, great, that's great, you got the right answer. So I can easily, because I have the key right there, parents at home, you can easily do this, okay? So this is another great resource, just another way to apply their Latin, another way to motivate them in their studies. And for students who want to do this, this is a great, great study material. Okay. I want to go back one little bit to strategies for encouraging reading. I think reading is so very important. You always need to look, when you begin your Latin studies, at why is it that you're reading or you're studying Latin. For me, it's not to build vocabulary, though that's really nice and helpful. It's not a root word study system, but it's very helpful. It's not to improve my English grammar, although that is also very, very helpful. The reason that I want to study Latin is that I can read Latin, particularly primary sources and great literature. I want to read the poetry of Virgil. I want to read the orations of Cicero. I want to study these masters of literature. I want to see primary sources for history in the original language. That excites me, and for my students, it excites them also. So I always encourage reading at every level. Anything you can do to encourage them to read, because I think it will motivate them too. I've learned all of this stuff. Now, how do I get to use it? How do I get to apply it? And in the logic stage, you have so many more opportunities for this. So this might sound funny, but actually Minecraft and Facebook have Latin language settings. And that may sound silly, but this was something my son actually discovered on my own and said, hey, Mom, guess what? And so he changed his settings for a period of time. And that's going to help the vocabulary, just that usage every now and then. And he thought it was pretty cool. Eventually, he ended up going back to English, but those are some just fun ways to encourage Latin. Reading stories, familiar stories, or side-by-side translations. Would you bring me the libellus, please, Michael? These are two readers. This one is definitely more grammar school. This one could be grammar school, but even in my logic school, I give students to read it every now and then, because there's nothing better than when you've climbed a mountain to look back and see how much you've accomplished. And so to even go back to some of these readers for grammar school and say, hey, let's just open this up, and here's the story about Marco Polo. Do you think you can read this? And they can actually read it pretty easily at that point in time. Is a great encouragement to them, and they actually have fun going back and reading these stories. You'll be surprised at how many stories have been translated from English into Latin. Winnie the Pooh was actually number one New York Times bestseller list back in the 1960s. Alice in Wonderland is now in Latin. Dr. Seuss is in Latin, although Dr. Seuss is pretty complicated Latin. But nonetheless, very fun. Ille Hobbitus just came out this past year, The Hobbit, and they all have dictionaries in the back. So things like that, I think, are wonderful resources, wonderful tools to get them to start reading, even if they don't know every word. And that's something you have to comfort them with pretty early on, is it's okay to not know every word. If I was to give you Shakespeare, you would not know every word. But that's how we learn, and that's how we grow. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and get these back. You can. And then hand me those next two books. The next two books I want to show you are side-by-side translations. There are a lot of books now, too, that actually put the Latin on one side and the English on the other. These are two fairly inexpensive ones that I picked up, the Latin letters of C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis carried on a long-term correspondence with an Italian priest. The Italian priest spoke no English, and C.S. Lewis spoke no Italian, but they both knew Latin, and they carried on a correspondence over a period of years in the Latin language, and you have the priest's, the letters that the priest received from C.S. Lewis are all in this book. And the lovely thing is that for the novice Latin student, you have the Latin on the left and the English on the right. Now, for those of you who get really excited about lateral integration, and I'm one of those nuts, this goes on during World War II. So you see discussions on theology, you see discussions on history playing out. He talks about Hitler and the impact that he's having in Latin. So this is a wonderful, fascinating story. And of course, everybody loves C.S. Lewis, so that one's a good one. This is a funny one, How to Win an Election by Cicero. So these are letters from Cicero about political campaigns. Once again, the Latin's on the left, the English is on the right. And there's also the Loeb Classical Library, same thing. So these are wonderful books. Michael, if you'll come get these. These are wonderful books to inspire kids to keep reading. And the nice thing is that they can read as much as they can on the Latin, even if it's just recognizing words and gleaning them out here. And they have the English on the right to continue the storyline. So I like to encourage those. Okay, let's get on to rhetoric. All right, so rhetoric school. They may be over your head, but they are not beyond your reach. I have had some very tenacious, ambitious parents over the year who hung in there with Latin for many, many, many a year. But maybe if you have only one child and nothing else to do, you can hang in there all the way through AP Latin, and I will commend you for it. But most of us don't do that. So strategies for study. Read and discuss, read and discuss, read and discuss. When they are sitting these great books in their humanities class, the best thing you can do to a parent in the evening is sit across from the dinner table and say, "So, Michael, tell me what you were reading about today. What book are you in? What period of history are you studying? What did you get from that? What did you think about Gatsby in that book and his relationship with Daisy? What does that say to you about that culture?" You know, so those are great conversations to have. You can do the same thing about their Latin studies. And when they get to the rhetoric level, what they're basically doing is they're reading authentic Latin literature, or they should be if you've got a good, strong program. So reading comprehension practice is a really great thing to do. Wow, you're reading the Aeneid. You're in book two, okay? So what just happened? Oh, this guy named Laocoon, he was sacrificing a bull, and these snakes came, and they gobbled him up. Really? That's fascinating. Pretty gory, yeah. Where did the snakes come from? The island of Tenedos. Was there any significance in that? Oh, well, yeah, that's where the Greeks were hiding. Cool. What about Virgil's word choice? Did he have some interesting words in describing those snakes? Actually, now that you mentioned it, yes, there was a lot of alliteration there. He chose words that had lots of S's in them, so it sounded like this hissing. Wow. What about the word arrangement? Because the nice thing about Latin, because it's not a word order language, oh man, Virgil can use that to such great impact. What about the word order? Didn't he do anything with the words that was interesting this time? Actually, you know there was this place where the snakes were actually intertwining and surrounding the bodies of his sons, and he was able to make the words surround the bodies. Oh, that's cool. Is there some special term for that? Yeah, I think it's timesis and juxtaposition. So you don't even have to know a lot. You just have to ask the questions. But you ask them questions about what they're reading. One of the things that I like to do is keep a dialectic journal in my advanced classes. This is a small little journal where once a week I'll ask them to please write on anything that they found particularly interesting in that week's assignment. Now, I might ask them something particularly on a theme, like heroes, or I might ask them to look for a rhetorical device. Say that we're learning about something like timesis. I might ask them, can you comment on an example of timesis in this passage and how it impacted Virgil's writing? Another thing that I've done is brought in art pictures and said, oh, you know what, here's a picture. And that'd be another great thing to do. You can Google art and any, you know, art in Ovid's Metamorphoses, art in Virgil's Aeneid. I just found this painting of Virgil's Aeneid. Do you know what story this is? Can you tell me about the story? Because again, that's asking them to explore, and we're not just looking at it as language and grammar. We're now looking at Latin as literature, and that's the whole point anyway. They've climbed Mount Parnassus. They've memorized all of those charts. Don't stop and jump off the cliff once you get to the top of the mountain. Take time to sit back and enjoy the view, because it is gorgeous up there. And there's a whole array of landscape before you to enjoy, whether it's theology or philosophy or history or literature. There's so much to enjoy there. So have those wonderful discussions. Okay, online tools for this one. Once again, those graphic grammar cards are fantastic. I always keep those in play. Michael, if you will just stand up and just hold those two workbooks, then you can pass them around. These are two other workbooks that I use. Now, I went ahead and chose these, both essential to Virgil, but Bolchesi Carducci has them for most Latin authors. And these provide multiple choice exercises. They provide short answer questions. They provide essay prompts to review and discuss these works of literature. You can pass those around, Michael, if you'd like. And a lot of these mimic AP-style questions, but honestly, they're great literary analysis whether you want to do AP or not. They're a fantastic resource. And Mom and Dad, you can buy the answer key from Bolchesi Carducci as well. So you can give them the multiple choice, have them do that, and then you can check it. Or you can have them write their essay and then say, okay, well, here's what the teacher's guide says. How do you think their answer compares to yours? It's not about right or wrong. It's really more about exploring a thought and expressing it well. So those are some wonderful tools. Now online, I'm going to go through these rather quickly. First one is Latin via fables, Latin via fables. Aesop fables. Aesop fables were originally written in Greek, but Phaedrus translated them into Latin and then added several of his own. Laura Gibbs is the author of this blog site. She's actually the author of an Aesop fables book. And there are all of the Aesop fables online here, complete with quizzes and some follow-up material. Fantastic site. The fables are always very, very short. So this is nice because it's not long and intimidating, and they're animals. The kids love animals. And you really can get into characterization here because Aesop is very good about characterization. The fox is always wily and crafty. The peacock is typically vain. So you see that develop of character really nice. Aeneas has a blog. This was a really fun site that one of my students actually put together. We read Virgil's Aeneid this year in Latin, and she blogged on it as if she was Aeneas. So I thought this was a wonderful, creative resource for you, but it also inspired me to do the same thing next year with my students, because as she's blogging, she's having to consider what she's read. And she did a masterful job of also incorporating some wonderful art pieces with that as well. The Tabney site, this is the one I want to go to and show you. This is specifically for AP Virgil's Aeneid, but it has things beyond the Aeneid as well. You can see here exercises in vocabulary, figures of speech. Again, this is something where Mom and Dad don't have to know the information themselves. It's a resource to help you. Online translations into English. Hear the Aeneid. There are places you can click on and actually hear someone reading it in meter. Vocabulary common to Virgil. Scansion practice for when you study poetry. And again, these are all going to be self-check. Approximately AP-style test items. These are just answer questions. Now, I'm going to click on one of these. Online multiple choice questions. These are fantastic. One of the things the AP asks students to do is to answer multiple choice reading comprehension questions. There will be some from Virgil and some from Caesar, which will be readings that students have read in their class. But then there are going to be some that are cite passages that the students have theoretically never seen before. Well, I will tell you as a teacher, it is very difficult to get through all of the syllabus of Caesar and Virgil and have time for all the sight readings that they should do to really become adept at this. So I tell my students, it's your exam, it's your score, it's your college credit. To increase your sight reading practice, go here. So I'm telling you, moms and dads, this is a great sight to know. Once again, it's self-check. So I can bubble in my answer down here by clicking on it, click check answer, and it'll tell me if it's right, or it'll tell me nope, incorrect, try again. And there's not really a score on this, it's just the instant feedback. And a lot of times there are hints, too, as to why that was the wrong answer or what is the hint for the right answer. So that's an extremely, extremely helpful site. one I'll show you just briefly is one that I have found recently for Julius Caesar. He's the other author on the AP exam. And it's this one with the Dickinson College commentaries. For the sake of time, I won't go through it in detail. This maps and tools is my favorite part. They have podcasts and videos on here talking more about Caesar's Gallic Wars. So again, he becomes a resource for your student or for you and your student together to read, listen, hear, explore, and talk through together. And this will be wonderful, partially for the AP exam, but even beyond the AP exam, for them to just understand this body of literature much better. So that pretty much concludes the list of resources I have. Again, if you did not get the handout, please email me. I'm more than happy to send it. At this time, I'd like to open up for any other questions you might have about something that I have mentioned, or if you have any other ideas for either grammar, logic, or rhetoric students that have worked successfully in your home or in your classroom. Yes, sir. I typically use green for adjectives. You know, I have seen purple and orange available, so typically we'd use one of those. So he was asking about colors for flashcards. So I typically use pink feminine, blue masculine, yellow neuter, green adjectives, and then sometimes we'll use purple or orange for adverbs. Yes, ma'am. Oh, that's great. So you like idiomatic expressions? Fantastic. Fantastic. So she was suggesting taking flashcards to the next level by putting idiomatic expressions or common phrases in Latin that you find so the students can memorize those also. For example, scolam habeo literally means to give a lecture. I mean, it literally means I have a class, but it's really more about holding a class and giving a lecture. Anybody else? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. No, not that I've seen. No, not that I've seen. From the few that I've done, it would accept multiple forms of the present. It would also do a lot of English to Latin as well. So in that sense, there's one correct, and that's what I saw more was Latin, English to Latin, because then you have one correct answer as opposed to having to program for three or four correct answers. Who else? Thank you so much. Yes, there is a Latin Alive Yahoo group. I'm actually the co-author of the Latin Alive series. And that has also been a wonderful place because it is a collection of teachers and parents from all over. I think that we've gotten to close to 300 on there now, maybe more. And they've all shared their ideas and their resources, which goes much further than what I, one person, can do. And I love that collective place. So if you just go to Yahoo groups, and look for Latin Alive Yahoo group. And they're not all applied directly to the Latin Alive series. Just like some of these worksheets I showed you, I created for my class, but they're applicable to many curricula. Anyone else? Well, thank you so much for your time. I hope this empowers you, equips you some, and I hope that you will pass that on to others. Thank you so much for your time, and bonum fortunam.